His mother said, "You coming with me or staying with your pa?" He stood hesitant. Grandma Hutto would bring out cake or cookies the moment he was in her house. On the other hand, he could never get enough of hearing his father talk with other men. The matter was settled for him by the storekeepers handing him a licorice stick for himself. It would keep body and soul together for the time being. He said loftily, "Me and Paul foller." She went out. Penny watched after her. He frowned. Boyles was stroking the fur of the deer hides with approval. Penny said, "I'd figured on taking cash for them hides, but if you'd as soon trade me a dress length of that black alpaca, why, I don't much care." Boyles said reluctantly, "I'd not do it for anybody else, but you've traded here a long time, all right."
"Best cut it up and wrap it before I change my mind," Boyle said wryly.
"You mean before I change mine?"
The scissors snipped crisply across the alpaca.
"Now gimme silk thread to match and a cart of them glass buttons."
"That's not in the bargain."
"I got money for it. And put the alpaca in a box, do it rain this evening."
Boyle said good-naturedly,
"Now you've cheated me. Tell me where a man can go to shoot him a wild turkey for Christmas dinner."
"I can't no more'n tell you where I'm fixin' to hunt one myself. They're mighty scarce. The plague got 'em bad. But you cross the river about where Seven Mile Branch flows into it. You know that cypress swamp with 2-3 good big cedars in it? Just southwest of the run? You work through there."
The good male talk was beginning. Jody sat down on a cracker box to listen. There were no other customers, and Boyles came out from behind the counter and pulled up a stray chair and an old cowhide rocker beside the thumper stove for himself and Penny. They got out their pipes, and Penny shaved Boyles a pipeful of his own tobacco.
"Nothing like home-raised tobacco for satisfaction," Boyles said. "You plant a patch for me this spring, I'll pay as high as anybody. Now go on. Southwest of the run..."
Jody chewed on his licorice stick. The rich, black juice filled his mouth, and the talk filled another hunger back of his palate that was seldom satisfied. Penny told of the flood in the scrub. It had been bad along the river, too, Boyles interrupted to say, but the river had carried most of the water away as fast as it fell. The banks had been flooded, and Easy Ozell's shack had swayed back and forth in the wind and finally capsized.
"He's living in Grandma's shed," Boyle said, "and happy as a pine borer in a fresh log."
Penny recounted the wolf hunt and the bear hunt, told of the rattler's strike which the foresters had not thought to mention. Jody lived the summer over again, and it was better than when it happened, the way Penny told it. Boyles was as fascinated and sat leaning forward, forgetting to smoke. A customer came in, and he left the stove grudgingly. Penny said,
"Your ma's been gone an hour or two, boy. You best run on to Grandma's. Tell 'em I'll be along directly."
The licorice had long been swallowed. It was getting on toward noon, and he was famished.
"Will we eat dinner at Grandma's?"
"Why, yes. If we wasn't invited, your ma'd have been back by now. You go on now, and carry that forequarter to her yourself."
He went, a little drugged with Penny's tale-telling. Grandma's tidy yard was recovering from the effect of the high water. The river had been over its bank here, and her fall flower garden had been washed away. There was unaccustomed debris here and there. The second planting was thriving, but there was no bloom, except of shrubs close beside the house. The blooms of the indigo had fruited into small black seed pods, curved like scythe blades. Grandma was inside the house with his mother. He heard their voices, and as he stepped up on the porch and looked through the window, he saw the flickering of flames on the hearth. She saw him and came to the door. Her embrace was friendly, but it lacked something of enthusiasm. The two Baxter men were more welcome without Ma. There was no plate of cookies anywhere in sight. The smell of cooking, however, came from the kitchen. Otherwise, he could scarcely have endured his disappointment. Grandma Hutto sat down again to talk with his mother with a tight-lipped patience. His mother was behaving no better. She looked critically at Grandma's frilled white apron. She said,
"No matter where I be,
I like to dress plain in the morning,
Grandma Hutto said tartly.
I wouldn't be caught dead without a frill on me. Men folks like a woman dress pretty. I was raised to call it indecent to dress to please the man.
Well, some of us plain folks has had to go poor on this earth or get our frills in heaven. Grandma Hutto rocked rapidly.
Now I don't want to go to heaven,
she announced. Ma Baxter said,
Reckon there's no danger.
Grandma's black eyes snapped.
Why wouldn't you want to go, Grandma?
Jody asked.
One thing, the company I'd have to keep.
Ma Baxter ignored this.
Another thing's the music. There's nothing played there, they claim, but harps. Now, the only music I like is a flute and a bass viol and an octave harp. Unless one of your preachers will guarantee that, I'll just refuse the trip with thanks.
Ma Baxter's face was stormy.
Another thing's the food. Even the Lord likes the incense of roasted meat before him. But according to the preachers, folks in heaven live on milk and honey. I despise milk, and honey makes me sick to my stomach.
She smoothed her apron complacently.
I figure heaven's only folks is longing for what they ain't had on earth. Well, I've had near about everything a woman could want. Maybe that's why I've got no interest.
Ma Baxter said,
Including Oliver running off with a yaller-headed Chipperdale, I reckon.
Grandma's rocker beat a tune on the floor.
Oliver's upstanding and fine-looking, and women has allus followed him and allus will. Take Twink now. She's not to blame. She'd never had a fine thing in her life, and then Oliver taken the notion to her. Why wouldn't she follow him? Poor child's an orphan.
She took out her frills.
Left an orphan at the mercy of the Christians.
Jody fidgeted in his chair. The coziness of Grandma's house was chilled, as though the doors were open. It was more woman business, he decided. Women were all right when they cooked good things to eat. The rest of the time, they did nothing but make trouble. Penny's step sounded on the porch. Jody was relieved. Perhaps his father could straighten them out. Penny came into the room. He rubbed his hands together by the open fire. He said,
Now ain't this fine. The two women I love the most in all the world waiting for me by the hearth fire.
Grandma said,
If the two women loved each other as good, Ezra, all'd be well.
I know you two don't get on, he said. You want to know the reason? You're jealous, Grandma, because I'm living with Ori. And Ori, you're jealous because you ain't as handsome as Grandma. Now, it takes a bit of age to make a woman handsome. I don't say purty. In time Ori's got a bit of age on her, maybe she'll be handsome too.
It was impossible to quarrel around his good nature. The two women laughed and bridled. Penny said,
What I want to know, is the Baxters invited to eat of the fat of the land, or be they obliged to turn around and go home to cold corn pone?
Now you know you're welcome day or night, and I do thank you for the dear meat. I only wish Oliver was here to eat it with us.
What's the news from him? We was right heard he didn't come to visit us before he put to sea.
It was a long time before he got over his beating. Then he had word there was a boat in Boston wanted him for mate.
I reckon there was a gal in Florida wanted him for the same thing, eh?
They laughed together, and Jody laughed with them for relief. Grandma's house was warm again. She said,
Dinner's ready, and if you scrub creeters don't eat hearty, my feelings'll be mighty hurt.
Dinner was not as lavish as when Penny and Jody came alone, yet there were furbelows to impress Ma Baxter and were very tasty. The meal was friendly. Ma Baxter said,
Well, we made up our minds to come to the Christmas doings. We couldn't come last year, for we'd not come empty-handed. You figure a fruit cake and a beta syrup candy will be welcome for my share? Nothing better. How about y'all spending the night and having Christmas with me?
Penny said,
Well, that'll be fine, and you can depend on me for meat. I'll get a turkey if I have to hatch one.
Ma Baxter said,
What about the cow and dogs and chickens? We can't all come off and leave them, Christmas or no Christmas.
We can leave enough for the dogs and chickens. They'll not starve in a day. And I got an ID. Trixie will be fresh, and we can leave the calf to nuss her.
And lose the calf to a blasted bear or panther.
I can fix a corral inside the barn where nothing won't bother them. Now, if you want to stay home and keep off the critters, you stay. But I mean to have Christmas.
And me, Jody said. Ma Baxter said to Grandma, I got no more chance at again them than a rabbit again a pair of wildcats.
Penny said, Now, all it seemed to me, 'twas Jody and me was two rabbits again one wildcat.
You make a mighty good race of it, she said,
but she had to laugh. It was settled that they would come for Grandma to go to the doings, returning to her house to spend the night and the next day. Jody was elated. Then the thought of Flag came over him like a dark cloud in a sunny sky. He burst out,
Now I just can't come. I got to stay home.
Penny said,
Why, what ails you, boy?
Ma Baxter turned to Grandma Hutto.
It's that tormented fawn of his'n. He can't bear it out of his sight. I never knowed a young'un so crazy for a live thing to mess with. He'll go hungry to feed it. He sleeps with it. He talks to it like it was a person. Oh, I've heard you out in that shed. He don't think of nary thing else but that troublesome fawn.
Penny said gently,
Don't make the boy feel like he has the smallpox, Ori.
Grandma said,
Why can't he bring it along?
He threw his arms around her.
You'll love Flag, Grandma. He's so smart, you can learn him like a dog.
Of course I'll love him.
Will he get along with Fluff? He likes dogs. He plays with Arn. When they go on a hunt, he slips off another way and meets up with them. He loves a bear hunt good as the dogs.
Praise of the fawn tumbled from him. Penny stopped him, laughing.
You tell her all them things, you'll leave nothing good for her to find out about him. Then she might find out some of the bad.
There's nothing bad about him, he said passionately. Only jumping on the table and knocking the tops off the lard cans and butting over the taters and into everything worse'n 10 youngins,
Ma Baxter said. She went into the garden to look at the flowers. Penny took Grandma aside.
I've been worrying about Oliver, he said. Them big bullies ain't drove him off or he was ready to go, have they?
It was me drove him off. I got tired of him traipsing off on the sly to see that gal. I said to him, Oliver, I said, you just as good go on back to sea, for you ain't a mite of good to me nor a mite of comfort. He said, I ain't a mite of good to myself. The sea's the place for me. I never figured that gal'd foller him.
You know, Lem Forrester's raring, don't you? Do he ever come here drunk, remember, he ain't human when he gets to sullen. Ease him off the best you can.
Now I sure as the devil won't waste no time tootling him. You know me better'n that. You know I'm made out'n whalebone and hell.
Ain't the whalebone getting a mite limber?
'Tis, but the hell's hot as ever.
I depend on you to back most men down, but Lem's different.
Jody was all ears. Now that he was at Grandma's again, Oliver seemed real once more. It was satisfying, however, to find that she had lost patience with Oliver, too. He would show his displeasure when he saw him again, but he would forgive him. He would never forgive Twink. The Baxters gathered up their baskets and bags and purchases. Jody tried to guess which sack contained his Christmas surprise, but they all looked alike. The distressing thought came to him that perhaps his mother had really wanted him to see if old Caesar had broken loose and had bought nothing for him at all. All the way home, he sounded her out on the subject.
You just as good ask questions of that wagon wheel, she said.
He took her evasion as a sure sign that she did have something for him. Chapter 26. The cow freshened the week before Christmas. The calf was a heifer, and there was rejoicing on Baxter's Island. It would take the place of the one the wolves had killed. Trixie was no longer young, and it was necessary to raise a heifer soon to replace her. There was little talk at the house except of the coming Christmas. Now that the calf was born, the whole family would be able to be away for overnight on Christmas Eve, for the nursling would take care of the milking. Ma Baxter baked a fruitcake in the largest Dutch oven. Jody helped her pick out hickory nut meats for it. It took all day to bake it. For 3 days, the cake was all there was of life. A day for preparing it, a day for baking it, and the day after for admiring it. Jody had never seen a cake so huge. His mother bulged with her pride. She said, "I don't go to the doings often, and when I do go, I aim not to go scarce." Penny presented her with the black alpaca the evening the cake was done. She looked at him and at the material. She burst into tears. She dropped into a chair and threw her apron over her head and swayed back and forth with every appearance of grief. Jody was alarmed. She must be disappointed. Penny went to her and laid his hand on her hair. He said, "'Tain't the lack of will I don't do such as that for you all the time." Jody understood then that she was pleased. She wiped her eyes and gathered the alpaca in her lap and sat holding it for a long time, now and then stroking it lengthwise. She said, "Now I got to move quick as a black snake to get this made in time." She worked day and night for 3 days, her eyes bright and contented. She was forced to call on Penny for help in the fitting. He knelt humbly, his mouth full of pins, and took up and let out as she directed. Jody and Flag watched, fascinated. The dress was done and hung under a sheet for clean keeping. 4 days before Christmas, Buck Forrester stopped by. He was good-humored, and Penny decided that he had imagined any mistrust. Old Slewfoot had visited Forrester's Island again, and had killed a 250-pound blue male hog in the nearby hammock. The kill had been in battle, and not for food. The hog had put up a mighty fight, he reported. The ground was torn up for yards around. One of the boar's tusks was broken off, and the other was wrapped with old Slewfoot's black fur.
"It's a good time to come up with him," Buck said, "for he belongs to be hurt."
They themselves had not discovered the kill until the day after it had happened. It had been too late to follow. Penny thanked him for the information.
"I reckon I'll set a trap inside the lot just to scare him," he said. "We all are fixing to go to the river for the doings." He hesitated. "You fellers coming?"
Buck, too, hesitated.
"I reckon not. We don't fool much with them Volusia Jessies. No fun going if we wasn't drunk. And Lem would likely pick a fight with some of Oliver's friends. No, reckon we'll get Christmas drunk to home, or maybe Fort Gates."
Penny was relieved. He could imagine the distress of the river folk if the Foresters had rolled into the prim and Christian gathering. He oiled his largest bear trap. It was 6 feet in width, and weighed, he said, nearly 6 stone. The chain alone weighed 2. He planned to shut the cow and calf together inside the stable, barricade the door, and set the trap just outside. If old Slewfoot came to make Christmas dinner of the new heifer while they were all away, he would have to take the trap first. The day passed busily. Jody polished again the necklace of Cherokee beans. He hoped his mother would wear them with the black alpaca. He had nothing for a gift for Penny. He worried and puzzled, and in the afternoon went to a low place where pipe elders grew. He cut a reed and made a pipe stem, and cut a bowl from a corn cob and fitted it. The Indians who had once been here had made pipe stems of the reeds, Penny had told him, and he had always meant to make one for himself. He could think of nothing for Flag. He admitted to himself that the fawn would be satisfied with an extra piece of cornbread. He would make him a halter of mistletoe and holly. That night, Penny stayed up after Jody had gone to bed. He occupied himself with a mysterious pounding and slapping and scraping that had something to do, no doubt, with Christmas. The 3 days left seemed like a month. No one, not even the dogs, heard any sound in the night. When Penny went to the lot in the morning to milk Trixie, and then to the calf's stall to turn it in to the mother to nurse. The calf was gone. He thought it had broken down its bars. They were intact. He went into the soft sand of the lot and studied it for tracks. In a straight line across the crisscross of cow and horse and human trails, the track of old Slewfoot stretched inexorably. Penny came to the house with the news. He was white with anger and frustration.
"I've had a bait of it," he said. "I mean to track that creeter down if I follow him clear to Jacksonville. This time, it's me or him."
He went immediately at the business of oiling his gun and preparing shells. He worked rapidly, his manner grim.
"Put me some bread and taters in a bag, Ori."
Jody asked timidly, "Can I go, Pa?"
"If you can keep the pace with me and not holler quits. If you give out, you got to lay where you fall or come on back alone. I ain't stopping before nightfall."
"Must I shut up Flag or leave him faller?"
"I don't give a blasted rap who follers. Just don't nobody look to me for mercy do the going get rough."
He went to the smokehouse and cut strips of gator tail for the dogs. He was ready. He trudged through the yard to the lot to take up the trail. He whistled for the dogs and put Julia on the track. She bayed and was off. Jody looked after him in a panic. His gun was not loaded, he had on no shoes, and he couldn't remember where he'd left his jacket. He knew from the set of Penny's back that it was useless to beg him to wait. He scrambled about, gathering up his belongings. He shouted to his mother to put bread and potatoes in his shot bag, too. She said,
"You're like to be in for it. Your paw's locked horns with that bear. I know him."
He called the Flag and tore madly after his father and the dogs. Their pace was swift. He was out of breath by the time he caught up to them. Old Julia was jubilant on the fresh trail. Her voice, her merry tail, her easy lope showed plainly that this was the thing above all others she wished to be doing. Flag kicked up his heels and ran beside her.
"He'll not be so frisky," Penny said ominously. "Do old Slewfoot raise up in front of him."
A mile to the west they found the remains of the calf. The old bear, kept perhaps by his injuries inflicted by the forester's boar from recent hunting, had eaten heavily. The carcass was well covered with trash. Penny said,
"He's due to lay up not too far away, figuring on coming back."
But the animal followed no rules. The trail continued. It led nearly to Forester's Island, swung north and west, and skirted Hopkins Prairie to the north. The wind was strong from the southwest, and Penny said that it was almost certain old Slewfoot was not far ahead of them, but had winded them. The pace was so rapid and the distance so long that in the late morning even Penny was obliged to stop for a rest. The dogs were willing to continue, but their heaving sides and hanging tongues showed that they too were weary. Penny stopped on a high live oak island by a clear pond on the prairie for the dogs to drink. He threw himself on the ground in the sunlight. He lay on his back without speaking. His eyes were closed. Jody lay down beside him. The dogs dropped flat on their bellies. Flag was unwearied and pranced about the island. Jody watched his father. They had never come so hard and so fast. Here was not the joy of the chase, the careless pitting of man's brain against creature speed and cunning. This was hate and revenge, and there was no happiness in it. Penny opened his eyes and rolled over on his side and opened his shot bag and took out his lunch. Jody took out his own. They ate without speaking. The biscuits and cold-baked sweet potatoes seemed almost savorless. Penny threw a few strips of the gator meat to the dogs. They gnawed contentedly. It was all one to them whether Penny hunted casually or with a desperate intent. The game was the same, the strong, sweet trail and the good fight at the end. Penny sat upright and swung to his feet.
"All right, time to get going."
The siesta had been brief. Jody's shoes were heavy on his feet. The trail led into scrub, then out again, back to Hopkins Prairie. Old Slewfoot was trying to shake the dogs. Their scent still came to him. Penny was obliged to stop twice in the afternoon to rest. He was furious.
Dog take it? Time was I didn't have to stop, he said. Yet each time that he set out again, his walk was so fast that Jody was tired out from following him. He dared not say so. Only Flag frisked and frolicked. The long trek was a casual jaunt for his long legs. The trail led almost to Lake George, cut back sharply south, and again to the east, lost itself in the dusk of the swamp. The sun was setting, and visibility was low in the shadows. Penny said,
"Uh-huh. He's fixing to come back and feed on that calf again. We'll go home and fool him."
The distance back to Baxter's Island wasn't great, but it seemed to Jody that he could never make it. On any other hunt, he could have said so, and Penny would have waited for him patiently. His father moved toward home as doggedly and relentlessly as he had left it. It was dark when they reached it, but Penny at once loaded the great bear trap on the slide, hitched Caesar to it, and dragged it to the site of the kill. He allowed Jody to ride on the slide. He himself walked beside Caesar, leading him. Jody stretched out his aching legs with relief. Flag had lost interest and hung around the kitchen door. Jody called,
"Ain't you tired, Pa?"
"I don't get tired when I be this mad."
Jody held a fat wood torch for him while he lifted the ragged carcass with sticks in order to leave no human taint, baited the trap and set it, and scratched leaves and rubbish over it with a pine bough. Penny squatted on the slide for the ride home, dropping the reins and allowing old Caesar to pick his own way. He put up the horse and found gratefully that Ma Baxter had done the milking. They went to the house. Hot supper was on the table, and he ate quickly and lightly, then went directly to his bed.
"Ori, what'd you take to rub my back with panther oil?"
She came and worked on him with big, strong hands. He groaned with the comfort of it. Jody stood watching. Penny rolled over and dropped his head on the pillow with a sigh.
"How you making it, boy? Had enough?"
"I feel good since it's I ate."
"Ugh. A boy's strength rise and fall on his belly. Ori."
"What?"
"I want breakfast before crack of day."
He closed his eyes and was asleep. Jody went to bed and lay a moment, aching. Then he, too, passed beyond hearing of Ma Baxter clattering in the kitchen, laying out materials for the early breakfast. He slept through the first sounds in the morning. He awakened, still drowsy. He stretched. He was stiff. He heard his father's voice in the kitchen. Evidently, Penny was in the same grim mood as yesterday and had not even thought to call him. He got out of bed and pulled on his shirt and breeches and went sleepily to the kitchen with his shoes in his hand. His hair was shaggy in his eyes. Penny said,
"Morning, feller. You ready for more?"
He nodded.
"That's the spirit."
He was too sleepy to eat much. He rubbed his eyes and dallied with his food. He said,
"Ain't it too soon to see?"
"Time we get there, it'll just be soon enough. I aim to creep up on him. Do he be suspicious and just sniffing around?"
Penny rose and leaned a moment on the table. He grinned wryly.
"I'd feel right good," he said, "if my back wasn't broke smacking too."
The black morning was bitter cold. Ma Baxter had made up the wool from Jacksonville into hunting jackets and jeans for both of them. They seemed too fine to wear, but walking slowly through the pine woods, they wished they had put them on. The dogs were still sleepy and tired and were willing to follow silently at heel. Penny put his finger in his mouth and lifted it to test any imperceptible stirring of air. There seemed to be none, and he went in a direct line toward the baited trap. It was in a place that was comparatively open, and he halted 100 yards away. Day was breaking in the east behind them. He slapped the dogs lightly, and they dropped to the ground. Jody grew numb with the cold. Penny was shivering in his thin clothes and ragged jacket. Jody saw old Slewfoot in every stump and behind every tree. Interminably slow, the sun rose. Penny whispered,
"If he's catched, he's dead, for I've heard nothing."
They crept forward with lifted guns. The trap was exactly as they had left it the night before. There was not light enough to make certain of the tracks to determine whether the wary creature had come and been suspicious and gone away. They rested their guns against a tree and swung their arms and stamped their feet to warm themselves.
"If he's been here," Penny said, "he ain't fur away. Old Julie'll jump 'em right quick."
The light was without warmth, but it spread through the forest. Penny walked forward, bent low to the ground. Julia was snuffing silently. Penny said,
"I be dogged, I just be dogged."
Even Jody could see that the only tracks were the day-old ones.
"He ain't been anywhere near," Penny said. "He wouldn't follow a rule to save him."
He straightened and called in the dogs and turned back for home.
"Anyways," he said, "we know where he left off yesterday."
He didn't speak again until they reached the house. He went to his room and pulled on his new wool hunting clothes over the old thin ones. He called to the kitchen.
"Ma, put me up meal and bacon and salt and coffee and all the cooked rations you got. Put 'em in the knapsack and scorch me some more rags for my tinderhorn."
Jody tagged after him.
"Must I put on my new things, too?"
Ma Baxter came to the door of the room with a knapsack. Penny paused in his dressing.
"Now, boy, you're plumb welcome to go. But get this in your head and get it good. This is nary pleasure hunt. It's cold weather, and it'll maybe be hard going and cold camping. I just ain't coming home again until I get that bear. Now, you still want to go?"
"Yes."
"Then get ready."
Ma Baxter glanced at the sheet over the black alpaca dress.
"You'll be gone tonight?"
"More'n likely. He's got a night's start on me. Maybe tomorrow night, too. Maybe a week."
She swallowed. She said weakly,
"Ezra, tomorrow's Christmas Eve."
"Can't help it. I got a right fresh trail to foller, and I'm taking it."
He stood up and fastened his braces. His eye caught the look of misery on his wife's face. He pursed his mouth.
"Tomorrow's Christmas Eve, eh? Ma, you'd not be afeard to drive the horse and wagon to the river in daylight, would you?"
"No, not in daylight."
"Then if we ain't back tomorrow by time to make it, you hitch up and go on. And if there's a chance it in the world, we'll come on to the doings. You milk before you go, and if we don't make it in, you'll be obliged to come on back next morning and milk. Now, that's the best I can do."
Her eyes were moist, but she went without comment and filled the knapsack. Jody waited his chance when she went to the smokehouse for meat for Penny. He pilfered a quart of meal from the barrel and hid it for Flag in his own new knapsack made of the hides of the panther kittens. It was the first time he had carried it. He stroked it. It wasn't as soft as the albino coonskin knapsack he had given Doc Wilson, but the blue and white spots were almost as pretty. Ma Baxter returned with Penny's meat and finished the packing. Jody stood hesitant. He had anticipated eagerly the Christmas doings at the river. Now he'd miss them. His mother would be glad to have him stay with her, and he would be considered honorable and even unselfish for doing so. Penny slung his knapsack over his shoulder and picked up his gun. Suddenly, Jody wouldn't be left behind for all the festivities in the world. They were out to kill old Slewfoot. He swung his little knapsack over his own warm wool shoulder and picked up his gun and followed his father with a light heart. They cut directly north to pick up the trail where it had ended the evening before. Flag made a sortie into the brush. Jody whistled shrilly.
"Hunting's a man's business, ain't it, Pa? Even on a Christmas."
"It's a man's business."
The track was still fresh enough for old Julia to keep it without pause or difficulty. It led east only a short distance beyond the point where they had left it, then turned sharply north.
"Just as good we didn't follow it last night," Penny said. "He was making for other counties."
The trail swung west again toward Hopkins Prairie and ran into wet marsh. It was difficult to follow. Old Julia splashed through the water. Now and then she lapped it, tasting, it seemed, the very scent of it. Again she laid her long nose against the rushes and stared vacantly, deciding for herself on which side the rank fur had brushed them. Then she was off again. She lost the scent entirely at times. Then Penny cut back to firm land and followed the line of the marsh to watch for the great nubbed track where it came out. If he found it before she struck, he called her with a hunting horn and put her on it.
"Here he goes, gal. Here he goes. Get him."
Rip, with the short legs, followed Penny. Flag was everywhere. Jody asked anxiously,
"Flag ain't no hindrance, is he, Pa?"
"Not a bit in the world. Did a bear wind him, he'd pay him no mind, lessen it was to turn around and come to him."
In spite of Penny's grimness, the hunt began to take on the old delight. The day was crisp and bright. Penny slapped Jody on the back.
"This is better than Christmas play, dollies, ain't it?"
"I mean."
The cold food at noon tasted better than most hot dinners. They sat and ate and rested under the good strong sun. They loosened their jackets. When they rose to go on, the knapsacks seemed heavy for a time. Then they became once more accustomed to them. It seemed for a time that old Slewfoot meant either to make a wide circle back to Forrester's or Baxter's Island, or to continue straight across the scrub to new feeding grounds on the Oklawaha.
"If Forrester's hog hurt him," Penny said, "he sure don't give a tinker's damn."
Irrationally, in mid-afternoon, the great tracks turned back into the swamp toward the east. The going was rough.
"Minds me of the time last spring you and me tracked him through Juniper Swamp," Penny said.
In the late afternoon, they weren't far, he said, from the lower reaches of Salt Springs Run. Suddenly, old Julia gave tongue.
"He would bed up in sich a place."
Julia dashed forward. Penny began to run.
"She's jumped him."
There was a crashing ahead, as though a storm broke through the denseness.
"Get him, gal. Hold him.
Yippee. Get him. Yippee."
The bear moved with incredible speed. He crashed through thickets that slowed the dogs. He was like a steamboat on the river, and the dense tangle of briars and thorny vines and fallen logs was no more than a fluid current under him. Penny and Jody were sweating. Julia gave tongue with a new note of desperation. She couldn't gain. The swamp became so wet and so dense that they sank in muck to their boot tops, and must pull out inch by inch with no more support, perhaps, than a bullbriar vine. Cypress grew here, and the sharp knees were slippery and treacherous. Jody bogged down to his hips. Penny turned back to give him a hand. Flag had made a circle to the left, seeking higher ground. Penny stopped to get his wind. He was breathing heavily. He panted,
"He's like to give us the slip."
When his breath came more easily, he set out again. Jody dropped behind, but across a patch of low hammock found better going and was able to catch up. The growth was of bay and ash and palmetto. Hummocks of land could be used for stepping stones. The water between was clear and brown. Ahead, Julia bayed on a high, long note.
"Hold him, gal! Hold him!"
The growth dissolved ahead into grasses. Through the opening, old Slewfoot loomed into sight. He was going like a black whirlwind. Julia flashed into sight a yard behind him. The bright, swift waters of Salt Springs Run shone beyond. The bear splashed into the current and struck out for the far bank. Penny lifted his gun and shot twice. Julia slid to a stop. She sat on her haunches and lifted her nose high in the air. She wailed dismally in misery and frustration. Slewfoot was clambering out on the opposite shore. Penny and Jody broke through to the low, wet bank. The black, rounded rump was all that was visible. Penny seized Jody's muzzleloader and fired after it. The bear gave a leap. Penny shouted,
"I tetched him!"
Slewfoot continued on his way. There was a moment's crashing as he broke a path through the thicket. Then even the sound of him was gone. Penny urged the dogs desperately. They refused flatly to cross the wide creek. He threw up his hands in despair and dropped down on his haunches in the wetness and shook his head. Old Julia rose and snuffed the footprints at the edge of the bank, then sat down and took up her lament where she had left it. Jody's flesh quivered. He supposed the hunt was done with. Old Slewfoot had given them the slip again. He was astonished when Penny rose, wiped the sweat from his face, reloaded both guns, and set off northwest along the open edge of the run. He decided that his father knew a less tangled way of returning home. Yet Penny kept to the creek even when open pine woods showed to their left. He dared not question him. Flag had disappeared, and he was in a panic for him. It was part of his bargain not to whimper, either for himself or the fawn. Penny's narrow back was stooped with weariness and discouragement, but it was a back of stone. Jody could only follow with sore feet and aching legs. The old muzzleloader was heavy across his shoulder. Penny spoke, but rather to himself than to his son.
"Now I seem to remember her house yonder."
The edge of the creek began to lift to high ground. Oaks and pines towered against the sunset. They came to a tall bluff overlooking the run. There was a cabin at the top of it, and a cleared field below. Penny climbed the winding path and walked up on the stoop. The door was shut, and no smoke came from the chimney. The cabin had no windows. Wooden shutters over square openings served the purpose. These were drawn closed. Penny walked around to the back of the cabin. A shutter here was ajar. He looked in.
"She ain't here, but we'll go in all the same."
Jody asked hopefully,
"Will we go home from here tonight?"
Penny turned and eyed him.
"Go home? Tonight? I told you, I'm going to get that bear. You can go home."
He had never seen his father so cold and implacable. He followed after him meekly. The dogs had lain down in the sand by the house, panting. Penny went to the woodpile and chopped wood. He gathered an armful and dropped it through the shutter opening. He climbed through after it and unbarred the kitchen door from the inside. Jody went back to the woodpile and split off a handful of fat wood splinters and brought them in and laid them on the floor. A Dutch oven and iron kettles stood or hung on cranes at an open hearth. Penny kindled a fire and hung a shallow kettle over it. He opened his knapsack on the floor and took out the slab of bacon and cut slices of it into the kettle. It began to sizzle slowly. He went outside to an open well and drew up a bucket of water on the windlass. He took a stained coffee pot from a shelf in the kitchen and made coffee and set it close to the growing blaze. He stirred up a corn pone in a borrowed pan. He laid two cold-baked sweet potatoes near the fire to warm through. When the bacon had fried, he scraped the cornmeal batter into the grease, turned it in a solid cake when it was brown, and turned the crane away from the blaze to finish the baking. The coffee boiled. He set it aside. He took cups and plates from the rickety safe and set them on the bare deal table.
"Draw up," he said. "It's ready."
He ate quickly and hungrily and took what corn pone seemed likely to be left and gave it to the dogs outside, with two more strips each of gator meat. Jody was cold, with more than the evening's bitterness. He hated having his father so silent. It was like eating with a stranger. Penny heated water in the kettle he had cooked in and washed the cups and plates and put them back in the safe. There was coffee left, and he set the pot aside on the hearth. He swept the floor. He went outside and gathered armfuls of moss from a live oak and made a bed under a sheltered corner of the house for the dogs. The night was settling down, very still and bitter cold. He brought in logs from the woods and pushed the ends of two of them into the fire, to be pushed forward from time to time. He filled his pipe and lit it, and lay down on the floor by the fire with his rolled knapsack for a pillow. He said kindly,
"You best do the same, boy. We'll be setting out soon in the morning."
He seemed more himself, and Jody dared now to question him.
"You figure old Slewfoot'll come back by here, Pa?"
"Not him. Not for longer than I care to wait. I'm right certain he's wounded. I'm going up to Salt Springs and cross over above the head of the run. Then down t'other side to where he lit into the thicket this evening.
That's a heap of distance, ain't it?
It's a fur piece.
Pa.
Well?
You reckon Flag ain't come to no harm?
You ain't forgot what I told you about letting him foller?
I ain't forgot, I...
Penny relented.
He ain't lost, if that's fretting you. You couldn't lose no deer in the woods. He'll turn up if he ain't taken the notion to go wild.
He'll not go wild, Pa, never.
Not so young, anyways. He's likely tormenting your Ma this minute. Go to sleep.
Whose house is this, Pa?
Used to belong to a widder woman. I ain't been here in a long whiles.
Will she care us coming in?
If it's a woman used to be here, she'll not care. I come all around, courting her, before I married your Ma. Go to sleep.
Pa.
Now, you got one more question coming to you before I take a brush to you. And if 'tain't a question with sense to it, I will anyway.
He hesitated. The question was whether Penny thought they could possibly reach the Christmas doings the next night. He decided that the query was not sensible. Following old Slewfoot was probably a lifetime job. He brought his thoughts back to Flag. He pictured him lost and hungry and followed by a panther. He was lonely without him. He wondered if his mother had ever been so concerned about him, her only son, and doubted it. He went, with some mournfulness, to sleep. He was awakened in the morning by the sound of wagon wheels in the yard. He heard the dogs bark and a strange dog answer. He sat up. Penny was on his feet, shaking his head to clear it. They had overslept. The sunrise lay rosy about the cabin. The fire had burned to embers and the charred ends of two logs still extended over the hearth. The air was like ice. Their breaths hung in frosty clouds. They were chilled to the bone. Penny went to the kitchen door and pulled it open. A step sounded, and a middle-aged woman came into the room, followed by a youth. She said, "For the Lord's sake." Penny said,
"Well, Nellie, looks like you can't get rid of me."
"Ezra Baxter. Now you could wait to be invited."
He grinned at her.
"Meet my boy, Jody."
She glanced at Jody quickly. She was a pretty woman, plump and rosy.
"He favors you a mite. This here's my nephew, Asa Revels."
"Not Matt Revels, boy." "I'll swear. Why, boy, I knowed you when you was no bigger'n a dirt dauber."
They shook hands. The youth looked sheepish. The woman said,
"Now you're so mannerly and all, Mr. Baxter, you could tell me how come you're making free of my house."
Her tone was jovial. Jody liked her. Women ran in breeds like dogs, he thought. She was of Grandma Hutto's breed that made men easy. And two women could say the same words and the meaning would not be the same as the bark of two dogs, one menacing and the other friendly. Penny said,
"Let me get us a fire going. My breath's too froze to talk."
He knelt by the hearth, and Asa went outside for wood. Jody followed to help. Julia and Rip were moving with stiff tails around the strange dog.
Asa said, "Your dogs like to scare Aunt Nellie and me to death."
Jody could think of no suitable response and hurried into the house with wood. Penny was saying,
"If you never been an angel from heaven, Nellie, you was one last night. Jody and me and the dogs has been trailing a big nub-footed bear 2 days steady. He's killed my stock one time too many."
She interrupted.
"A bear with one toe gone off his front foot? Why, he cleaned me out of hogs the past year."
"Well, we trailed him clear from home and jumped him in the swamp south of the lower end of the run. If and I'd had 10 more yards on him, I'd have had him. I shot after him 3 times, but he was too fur. Last time I stung him, he swum the creek and the dogs wouldn't take the water. Well, Nellie, I never been so near give out since the time you told me Fred wanted to keep steady company with you."
She laughed.
"Oh, go on with you. You never wanted me."
"It's too late to commit myself. Well, I knowed if you hadn't married again and moved off, your place was up here somewheres.
I knowed you'd not begrudge me your floor and hearth. And when I laid down to sleep last night, I said, God bless little Nellie Jinwright. She laughed out loud.
Well, I don't know nobody is more welcome, but next time I'd not have sich a start did I know ahead of time. A widder woman ain't used to strange dogs in the yard and a man by the hearth. What you fixin' to do now?
Soon as I eat a bite of breakfast, I'm fixin' to cross the run above the head of the spring and take up the trail on t'other side where we last seed him.
She knitted her forehead. Now, Ezra, no need to do that. I got a old dugout right above here. It's mighty sorry and season cracked, but he'd carry you across the creek. Take it, and welcome, and save the miles.
Hi-yippee! You hear that, Jody? Now I got to say again, God bless little Nellie Jinwright.
Not so little as when you knowed me.
No, but you're a heap better looking now. You was allus pretty, but you was too thin. You had legs like a buck-rubbed sapling. They laughed together.
She took off her bonnet and bustled about the kitchen. Penny seemed now in no great hurry. The distance saved by the use of the dugout across the creek gave them time for a leisurely breakfast. He donated the rest of the bacon. She cooked grits and made fresh coffee and biscuits. There was syrup for the biscuits, but no butter or milk. I can't keep stock here, she said. The gators gets what the bears and panthers don't, she sighed. A widder woman's hard put to at times.
Asa here don't live with you?
No, he just come back with me from Fort Gates, and he's gone to the doings at the river with me tonight.
We was aiming to go, too, but I reckon we just as good forget it.
A thought struck him.
But now my wife'll be there. You tell her you met up with us, so she'll not be fretted.
You're just the kind, Ezra, would worry was his wife fretted. You never asked me, but I often figure I made a sorry out of it not encouraging you.
And I reckon my wife figures she made a sorry out of it doing so.
None of us don't never know what we want till it's maybe too late to get it.
Penny was judiciously silent. Breakfast was a feast. Nellie Jinwright fed the dogs generously and insisted on putting up a lunch for the Baxters. They left reluctantly, warmed in body and spirit.
The dugout's less than a quarter up the run, she called after them.
There was ice everywhere. The switchgrass was coated with it. The old canoe was embedded in it. They broke it loose and launched it. It had been out of water a long time. It leaked so fast behind their efforts that they gave up bailing and got in to make a dash for it. The dogs were suspicious of the boat, and as fast as Penny lifted them into it, they jumped out. In the wasted minutes, the canoe acquired several inches of icy water. They bailed again. Jody climbed into the middle and squatted. Penny handed him the two dogs by the scruff of their necks. He clasped them tightly around their middles and held on desperately against their struggles. Penny pulled out from shore with an oak limb. Once out from the fringes of ice, the current ran swiftly. It caught the dugout and swung it downstream. The water seeped in to Jody's ankles. Penny sculled madly. The water gushed in from a crack at the bow. The dog stood quiet now, trembling with fear at the strangeness. Jody crouched and paddled with his hands. The creeks all seemed friendly in summer. When he was dressed in a thin ragged shirt and his ragged breeches, a spill meant only a quick, cool swim to either shore. The heavy wool jeans and jackets would be poor friends in the freezing water. The canoe was sluggish and unmanageable with its weight of water. Penny made the far bank just as it settled obstinately to the creek bottom. The water sloshed over their boot tops and numbed their feet. But they were on land, on the same side of the run as old Slewfoot, and they had saved hours of heavy going. The dog shivered with the cold and looked to Penny for orders. He gave none but set out immediately southwest along the creek bank. In places it was so low and marshy that they were forced to cut back into the swamp, or even higher into the woods. The area lay between an arm of Lake George and the continued northward reach of the St. John's River. It was boggy and treacherous going. Penny halted to take his bearings. He could depend on old Julia to pick up the trail when they crossed it, but he dared not push her too rapidly. He had an uncanny feeling for distance. He identified a dead cypress across the run as one they had passed shortly after losing the bear. He slowed his pace to a walk and went cautiously, studying the frozen earth. He pretended to find a track. He said to Julia,
"Here he goes. Get him. Here he goes."
She stirred from her cold lethargy, swayed her long tail, and began to snuff noisily. After a few yards, she gave a small, thin cry.
"There 'tis. She's got it."
The great tracks were imprinted solidly in the muck. They could be followed easily with the eye. Bushes were broken in the thicket where Slewfoot had crashed through. Penny was close behind the dogs. The bear had bedded as soon as he was certain he was no longer followed. A scant 400 yards beyond the creek bank, Julia jumped him. He was invisible in the thicket. His ponderous leap sounded. Penny could not shoot without a sight, for the dogs were close on the leathery heels. Jody expected his father to break into as much of a run as was possible in the dense swamp growth. Penny said,
"We can't catch him ourselves, no way. Lead him to the dogs. I got a ID. Slow time'll prove the fastest."
They pushed through steadily. Penny said,
"We got this much satisfaction. He's wore out, too."
He underestimated his enemy. The chase continued. Penny said,
"Looks like he's got a ticket to Jacksonville."
Bear and dogs were out of sight and hearing. The trail was still plain to Penny's eyes. A broken bough, a bent clump of grasses unrolled a map before him, even where the ground was hard and showed no footprints. In late morning, they were winded and had to stop to rest. Penny cupped his ear into the light, icy wind that had risen.
"Now I think I hear old Julia," he said. "At the bay."
The impetus set them forward again. At high noon, they came up with a quarry. He had decided at long last to stop and fight it out. The dogs had him at bay. He swayed sideways on his thick, short legs, growling and baring his teeth. His ears were laid flat in his fury. When he turned his back for further retreat, Julia nipped at his flanks, and Rip rounded him to spring for his shaggy throat. He slashed at them with great curved claws. He backed away. Rip swung behind him and sunk his teeth in a leg. Slewfoot squealed shrilly. He wheeled with the swiftness of a hawk and raked the bulldog to him. He caught him up in his forepaws. Rip yelped in pain, then fought gamely to keep the jaws above him from closing on his backbone. The two heads tossed back and forth, snarling and snapping, each trying for the other's throat while protecting his own. Penny lifted his gun. He took steady aim and fired. With Rip hugged to his breast, old Slewfoot dropped. His killing days were done. It seemed so easy now that it was over. They had followed him. Penny had shot him. There he lay. They looked wonderingly at each other. They approached the prone carcass. Jody was weak in the knees. Penny's walk was unsteady. Jody felt a clear lightness fill him, as though he were a balloon. Penny said,
"I declare, I believe I'm surprised."
He slapped Jody on the back and cut a bucking wing. He screeched, "Yippee!" The sound echoed through the swamp. A jaybird screeched after him and flew away. Jody took up his excitement and shrilled, "Yippee!" Old Julia crouched and barked with him. Rip, licking his wounds, wagged his stumpy tail. Penny shouted tunelessly, "My name is Sam. I don't give a damn. I'd rather be black than a poor white man." He pounded Jody again. "Who's a poor white man?" Jody shouted,
"We ain't poor. We got old Slewfoot."
They capered together and shouted and yippied until their throats were hoarse and the squirrels were chattering all about them. They were at last relieved. Penny laughed breathlessly.
"I ain't whooped and hollered that away. I don't know when.
I'll swear it done me good.
Jody's exuberance was still on him, and he whooped again. Penny sobered and leaned to examine the bear. He would weigh 500 pounds. His hide was magnificent. Penny lifted up the huge front paw with its missing toe. He said,
"Well, old fella, you was a mighty mean enemy, but you got my respect."
He sat down victoriously on the stout ribs. Jody touched the thick fur. Penny said,
"Now we got to do a piece of studying. Here we be in the middle of nowhere with a thing bigger'n you and me and your ma put together and the cow throwed in."
He took out his pipe and filled and lighted it leisurely.
"Just as good to study comfortable," he said.
He was in such high spirits that the problem which seemed insoluble to Jody was no more to him than a pleasant challenge. He began to figure half to himself.
"Let's see now. We'd ought to be just about between Bear Spring and the river. The Fort Gates road to the west, the river to the east. Now, can we get the black gentleman here to Horse Landing? There's boats passing all the time. Well, we'll get 'em gutted and figure some more."
It was like turning a wagon load of sacks of meal all at once to turn him over on his back. The thick layers of fat under the hide made him roly-poly and flabby. He would not stay firmly when held.
"Just as ornery dead as alive," Penny said.
He disemboweled the carcass neatly. Old Slewfoot was as trim and harmless as a whole beef hanging in a butcher shop. Jody tingled, holding out the heavy legs so that Penny could get at his work. He had never thought to see the day when he would hold the huge paws in his small ones. He had had no share in the hunt except to follow his father's small, inexorable back, but now he felt strong and mighty. Penny said,
"Now we'll see, be we men enough to budge him."
Each took a forepaw and strained ahead. The effort needed to move the dead weight was prodigious. By heaving and jerking, it was possible to pull it a foot at a time.
"We'll not get to the river by spring this way," Penny said, "and starve to death on the way to boot."
The inability to keep a firm grip on the smooth-haired paws was the greatest bar to their progress. Penny sat on his heels and pondered. He said at last,
"We can walk on to Fort Gates and get help. That'll cost us a good share of meat, but it'll spare our own gizzards. Or else, we can rig up a kind of a pooling harness and fight it out to the river, and maybe tear our very hearts out. Or we can make it on and home and get the wagon."
"But the wagon'll not be there, Pa. Ma'll be done gone to the doin's."
"Now you know I plumb forgot 'twas Christmas Eve day."
Penny pushed back his cap and scratched his head.
"Well, come on, boy."
"Where are we going?"
"Fort Gates."
The road leading to the small settlement on the river was a scant 2 miles to the west, as Penny had been certain. It was good to turn from the swamp and the scrub to the open sandy road. A cold wind blew down it, but the sun was beneficent. Penny found a patch of cancer weed by the roadside and broke the stems and let the healing sap drip on Rip's wounds. He was talkative, and as they walked on, he brought out from his half-forgotten lore tales of other bear hunts long ago. Penny said,
"When I were about your size, my Uncle Miles come visiting from Georgia, and a cold day about like this he'd taken me in the very swamp we come through today. He was moseying along, not looking for nothing in particular, and on beyond us we seed what looked like a buzzard setting on a stump, pecking at something. Well, we got there, and what do you suppose 'twas?"
"'Twasn't no buzzard."
"'Twasn't no buzzard at all. 'Twas a bear cub, cuffing playful-like at his twin on the ground below him. My Uncle Miles said, 'Now we'll just catch us a bear cub.' They was right gentle, and he goes up to the one on the stump and catched it. Well, when he catched it, he didn't have nary thing to tote it in, and them scapers'll gnaw on ye if they ain't in a sack. Well, them up-country folks wears underwear in the winter.
He takened off his breeches, and he takened off his long drawers, and he tied knots in the legs of them, and he made him sack. He put in the cub in it, and about the time he reached for his breeches to put 'em back on again, here come a crashing and a woofing and a stomping in the brush, and the old she-bear come out in the thick right at him. Well, he takened out through the swamp and dropped the cub, and the mammy gathered it up, drawers and all. But she was so close to behind him, she stepped on a vine, and it tripped him, and throwed him flat amongst the thorns and brambles. And Aunt Maw was a muddle-minded kind of woman, and she couldn't never make it out how he come home without his drawers on a cold day, and his bottom scratched. But Uncle Miles allus said that wasn't nothing to the puzzling the mammy bear must have done over them drawers on her young'un. Jody laughed until he could laugh no more. He complained, "Pa, you got all them tales in your mind, and you don't tell 'em."
"Well, it takes a thing like being in the swamp where it happened to call it back to me. Now, in that same swamp, one very cold March, I remember coming on another pair of bear cubs. They was whimpering with the cold. Newborn cubs is no bigger than rats and plumb naked, and these uns hadn't yet growed much fur. They was huddled up in a red bay thicket and crying like human babies. Listen." The sound of hoofbeats was unmistakable along the road behind him. "Now, wouldn't it be fine not to have to go clear to Fort Gates for help?" The sounds came closer. They stepped to the side of the road. The riders were the foresters. Penny said, "Looks like I miscalled myself." Buck led the cavalcade. They streamed down the road. They were drunk as lords. They reined in.
"Now, look at this. Old Penny Baxter and his he-cub. Hey, Penny, what the devil you doing up here?"
Penny said, "I've been on a hunt. And this one was deliberate. Me and Jody taken out after old Slewfoot."
"Whoops. On foot? Listen to that, boys. That's better than a pair of old biddies romping on a hawk."
"And we got him," Penny said. Buck shook himself. The whole array seemed to sober.
"Don't tell me none of them tales. Where he at?"
"About 2 miles to the east, between Bear Spring and the river."
"Reckon he is. He fools around there a good bit."
"He's dead." "How I know he's dead?" "I gutted him. Me and Jody's walking Fort Gates for help and toting him out in the swamp." Buck stiffened in a drunken dignity.
"You going to Fort Gates for help getting out old Slewfoot and the best Slewfooters in the county right here beside you?"
Lem called.
"What do you give us? Do we go tote him out?"
"Half the meat. I figured on giving it to you anyways, account of him tormenting you so, and Buck coming to warn me." Buck said,
"You and me's friends, Penny Baxter. I warn you, and you warn me. Get up here behind me and point the way."
Millwheel said, "I don't know as I crave going into no swamp today and clear back to Baxter's Island. I got my mind set on frolic." Buck said,
"You ain't got no mind. Penny Baxter,
what do you want?
You still figuring on going to them dunes at Volusia?
Could we get the bear out in time to make it? We figured on it. We're running mighty late."
"Get up here behind me and point the way, boys. We'll get out that bear and we'll go to the doings at Volusia. If they don't want us, they can throw us out. If they can."
Penny hesitated. Help of any sort from Fort Gates, especially Christmas Eve day, would be hard to obtain. But the foresters at the respectable gathering would scarcely be welcome. He decided to let them help him with the big carcass, and then trust to luck to send them on their way again. He swung up behind Buck. Millwheel held down a hand for Jody to clamber up behind him. Penny said,
"Who's big-hearted enough to tote my bulldog? He's not bad hurt, but he's done a heap of running and fighting.
Gabby picked up Rip and carried him in the saddle in front of him.